It's time for the one show that looks at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller, and our guest today is Janine McDonald, and we're going to be talking about change management. But hold on, we'll get to that in just a minute. If you're listening to this show live, then you're on octalkradio.net. If you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, www.thecoachingperspective.com. And also be sure while you're there to check out our archives for our other shows with some great guests just like today's. Well, today's program, Riding the Roller Coaster of Change Without Getting Sick. Boy, that should entice you. Let me tell you about Janine. Janine is the founder and CEO of J9 Leading Solutions. She is a organizational, it is an organizational consulting service firm that helps organizations create high-impact strategies, develop effective leaders, and tailor operations to achieve maximum community impact. Janine is an organizational consultant, trainer, and speaker, specializing in strategic planning, leadership development, organizational development, employee engagement, and capacity building. She's committed to helping individuals grow as leaders, to teams learning, and to organizations building their capacity. So, Janine, welcome to The Coaching Perspective.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here, and let's just start right off here. Tell our audience about what you did before what you're doing right now. What did you do before J9?
Well, I actually spent 18 years with an organization, and I know in this day and age that's kind of unusual, but when I graduated from college, I'd set out to be a journalist and decided in the process of learning what that meant to work on a daily newspaper at the college level that it was a grind, and I didn't really want that for my life, and so I, you know, got out of college without a plan, and I thought, what am I going to do? And I was very fortunate to fall into an entrepreneurial company here in Orange County that provided me a career path that, in today's terms, we would call a lattice career path, where it was in the residential community management area, and I spent half of my career there in operations and direct client services and managing and supervising employees, and the other half of that career, part of my lattice, was in training and development and organizational development for that same organization, and where it really, you know, grew from being a small, you know, 50, 60-person operation to being over 550 people while I was there. And the experiences that I gained along the way there really, you know, helped me land to doing what I'm doing today and open the practice that I opened in 2008. And one of the pivotal points in that 18 years was when I went back to school at Chapman University, one of our local universities here, to obtain my master's in organizational leadership. And that was one of those life-changing decisions that I made that really set me truly on the path that I'm on today. That's where I knew I really loved working with people, and ultimately, you know, learning more about how I could help them develop their capacity to lead others was really the path that I wanted to be on, and how I got to be where I am today.
Wonderful. Great story. And, you know, I'm familiar with Merit, and what a great company, and how neat to know the impact you had on their rapid growth. I mean, boy, they were a benchmark for almost every firm in that industry. So, you know, some of us have memories of that first job that aren't so fond, and some have memories that are very fond. But one way or another, that first job always has an impact on where we're going.
I did leave out the part there was the true first job, the one before Merit, that, you know, where I had all the classic sexual harassment, inappropriate behavior, all the things that they warn you about. And I thought, okay, I need to find a different environment to work in. And, you know, 180 degrees was Merit. And again, both the coaching I received from the CEO and the leaders in that organization, you know, really helped model for me what that means and how you can help other people in their careers in doing that. So I was very fortunate to only have had that brief prelude in the other company, and then to have landed and found something so fitting for my work style and my goals and what I was striving to do.
Well, that's great. And you know, we're going to hear more about your helping attitude, and I want you to be sure to share that with our audience, because I'm truly impressed with the number of give back functions that you're involved in with our community here in Orange County, and I do want you to be sure to share that today. So, but tell us about your business. Tell us about J9. How did it start? What's it doing now, and where's it going?
Sure. So, you know, as often happens too with life, though, there's kind of a critical event that happens. And for me, it was very personal and very emotional, where I went through, after being together with my ex-husband for almost 20 years, went through a divorce situation. And I had a young child at the time, a five-year-old, and really caused me to assess, you know, do I want to continue doing what I'm doing, or do I want to do something different and create a different life for myself in many ways, right? And so really, that was my first experience, actually, where I started to work with a professional certified coach and really work through what does my personal vision look like of what I want to do. And it led me to this, you know, which, you know, at the time seemed very radical, but to go out on my own and set up my own practice so I could help do what I had done at Merit with other organizations, both in the nonprofit sector as well as the for-profit sector. And, you know, and the bottom line of it is, when people ask me, well, what do you do? And I tell them I try to help move people, groups, companies from where they currently are to where they want to be. And having had that experience myself and having had that help through that and feeling, you know, kind of triumphant coming out the other side, I really wanted to help other people do that. And so the context in which I do that with people, you know, are kind of a multi-pronged. Sometimes it's in direct coaching. Sometimes it's consulting, training, speaking. It depends on the needs. But, you know, my focus really is to help other people transform their potential into, you know, the performance and the life and that they want to create for themselves, and helping them see that there's the option to do that.
And Janine, how common is it for you to run into people that are clear about where they want to go in their life?
It's usually, they're not that clear. And that's the value of having someone to support them in, you know, being, asking the questions. I mean, that's so critical to coaching, right? It's helping draw out what is inside the person that they may not know about. And because people often are just continuing on a path because it's familiar and they're comfortable with it. And as we get into kind of our discussion more around change, you know, it's just easier for people to stay doing what they're doing, even if it's not really what they want to be doing. They don't pause and reflect and think about enough where is it that they could go and what is it that they could do if they really, you know, put their mind to it and decided that's where they wanted to go. So they often need help.
Well put, well put, and understated. Well, look, before we get into the meat of our discussion, there's a question we ask all of our guests, and I told you about this ahead of time, and we've had fascinating answers from everyone, and you told me that I was going to be blown away by your answer. But the question is, you know, what is the guiding principle that you use for your life, for your business? What experience shaped who you are today?
So I promised a good story, so here it is, Doug. So in the late 90s, I was approaching a milestone birthday and decided I needed to do something, you know, kind of radical and spectacular. And we had just purchased a boat, and I decided, along with a friend, to do the Long Beach to Catalina water ski race. And I don't know if you know anything about that race, but it is 62 miles from Long Beach to Catalina Island and back on a water ski. And so in the world of endurance racing, it's a fairly extreme event. And we set out and trained for that event for 9 months. And I say I did it with a friend because there were actually both of us raced behind the one boat together. So it created this, you know, actual team environment where if one of us fell, the other had to fall, and you were in it together. So it was really a wonderful experience because at the end, we weren't in it to break any world records, although that day an Italian, it's an international race, he did break the record for that race. But we completed it, we celebrated it, and that, I had no idea at the time that experience I would go back to it so many times in my life where I would, if I were questioning what I was doing, I would think about, if I can do that, if I can stand on a board that's 84 inches long and go through the channel and across the wake of, you know, the Catalina Flyer and see shark fins in the water. And if I can do all those things, I could do anything, you know, with, you know, proper planning. We had, you know, a, you know, race plan. We were prepared. I trained for months. I had the drive. I, you know, and there was a lot of tenacity and perseverance that had to come with that, because there were days of training when the conditions were horrible, the water was cold, the waves were huge, and I had an extreme amount of support. You know, there's not only the driver of the boat, there's the observer, there's we had a whole team, and that I couldn't have done the race without the team and without my partner who did the race with me, and we cheered each other on and supported each other. And so in terms of a guiding principle that that I live by really is that, you know, you can do what you want to do. You know, if you have a plan, if you are prepared, if you're tenacious, and if you have support, and the sky is really the limit. And I found that for myself, and that's a, you know, message I try to impart to my clients as well. And, you know, and because even at a business level, often, you know, there's fear around, can we really do this radical thing? And in an age where, you know, companies are needing to innovate, there's still a lot of fear around doing something that seems bold. And so for me, that race really set for me, you know, an experience that I could draw on in times of need. And it's not always easy to keep that, you know, that mindset when the going gets tough, but it helps me.
Wow, you were right. That was a great story, and it is one I haven't heard before, so the record is intact.
Good.
Everybody we interview has a different story. And you know what? Now you seem like a normal person when I talk to you, and I've seen people doing that race, and my opinion was they've got to all be crazy. But congratulations to you. That was not an easy feat. You know, one thing I have to ask, I wasn't aware that people did it in tandem. My impression was I'd only seen single skiers behind a boat. Was that unusual?
No, there's a couple different classes of, you know, how they'll break the race into race classes, and tandem is a part of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I just have to ask this, and I'm sorry if I'm getting off topic here, but, you know, but hey, it was a good story. Do you think that the fact that you had a partner dependent upon you, that if you went down, she was going to be out of the race also, did that help you in the race?
Yes, you know, it really helps you dig. You have to sometimes dig deep, right? And I believe it did help a great deal. And in fact, the same person that I did the race with, she just called me yesterday and was wanting me to take on something with her. I was really going through another academic program, and she said to me, it would be so great if we did it together, you know. And so there is that sense of, and that sometimes the coaching relationship is like that too. If you're kind of in it with somebody and you're accountable to somebody, there were a lot of mornings where I had to get up and get to the gym at 6 o'clock in the morning before work that I probably would have stayed in bed if I knew somebody else wasn't counting on me. And so that really did help, you know, push through parts of the project, or the you know, the race where it was, you know, you didn't maybe want to go forward on your own, but you knew someone else was there. It's like, I got to keep holding on. I've got to hold on here, because I don't want to fall. Or then if, you know, and it's something like that, if you can picture, if you've seen it, a couple hundred boats going out at the same time and the wakes that are created. And so we did fall going out, but then we made it all the way there and all the way back without falling. And it's funny, though, how the competitive nature will kick in. There was another boat with a tandem team behind it coming into the finish line. And we were like, we want to beat them, right? So we're given the signal to go faster, and we fell. And at that point, you're exhausted. You've gone 60 miles. And getting up at that point was probably the time I had to dig the very deepest to do something that I thought, I don't know if I can do it. But we did, and you do, you know, to finish, you have to be on top of the water. They can't drag you across the water to finish. So we got up and finished.
Oh, the technicalities. Well, you know, I mean, and what a great life lesson there, too. And the fact that, you know, there's very few things in life that we really do alone for just ourselves. I mean,
right.
It seems to me that the people that have really major accomplishments, if you dig behind the story, you find that it was because of somebody else or for somebody else that allowed them to accomplish that. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Great story. Well, look, let's talk about now that we're out of the water and across the finish line, let's talk about change management and what you're dealing with today in the change management field. You know, there's lots of myths about change. You want to talk a little bit about that to kind of get us started?
Certainly. Well, I think the biggest myth, I mean, there's a lot of, the other way I like to kind of frame it too is people have a lot of stories in their head that they tell themselves about change, like, this will go away, or, you know, it will help if I get upset about it, or this is bad, change is bad for me, or I'm just going to ignore it and just keep doing what I'm doing, right? All of those things are not a healthy way to look at change, and the what I'm seeing kind of where things are hitting a critical point now is what I'm calling change saturation. People are so overwhelmed with change, not only in their workplace, but in their lives, that they are having a hard time coping with the change. And it's here to stay. I mean, people have been saying that for years. Change is the only constant, and that does hold true. And people are really struggling with how to process all that change, and that is such a personal experience. I always like to give the to kind of talk about, you've got the example who, this is my upbringing, where I lived in the same small town in Northern California where my parents were raised, and we lived in the same place the whole time I was growing up. You know, and I have a friend whose father was in the military, and they moved around every year kind of thing. And so those experiences for each of us framed part of how we look at change. And change is so individual, and that's what makes it challenging when you get into kind of a organizational transformation situation. You can't really manage it the same for everybody because it's such a personal experience. And there's different levels and complexity of change, and also the culture in which you're experiencing the change. So if you work for Google or you work for Zappos or Southwest, their culture is innovative by its very nature, and so you probably didn't get a job there if you didn't somewhat have that sort of inclination and comfort with change and innovation. You've got other more traditional financial institutions and so forth that have a much slower incremental approach to change, and folks in those organizations, you know, might have a harder time. But in either case, you cannot make a blanket statement that's going to apply to everybody. And the challenge that I see for the leaders is they know they need to do something about it, about change, but they aren't really sure what to do. And so where I see a need and where I try to provide help is around equipping these leaders and these managers to really understand change for themselves, understand how they can support their employees during the change, and support the employees and the organization even after the change has happened. And part of what's critical to recognize is that change is really, you have to let something go and something has to end before you can move on to whatever is the new state, right? Well, that creates that's risky for people. That creates doubt and ultimately fear, and that's what holds people up and really grips people. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, Doug, too. I find that we often focus at an organization level, they focus on, okay, we've got to communicate around these big change impacts, where it's often the very small personal changes that the larger change causes that really set people off balance. I'll give you an example with an organization I'm working with right now. They're moving. They've got a couple locations. They're moving 100 people from one location to another location. Well, one of the things people are unsettled about is the parking, because, you know, people are creatures of habit, so I come in and I park on level 4. Well, now there's going to be 100 extra cars parking, and is somebody going to park in my place, and I'm not going to be able to park there. And so the things about change that make people feel like they're going to throw up, like when you ride a roller coaster ride, often are very small things that the change can trigger and bring along. So I've got to probably pause a little bit here because I'll just keep talking on the change. But, you know, the concept, though, really the point I wanted to make initially here is that there's so much change going on. People are struggling, you know, to process it and to keep up with the change that they're being asked to experience. And in some cases, you know, really forced to, if they want to keep their job, if they want to keep up. The pace of change is accelerated, just like the pace of, and that's partly because of the pace of technology, for example. That's, you know, there's a linkage there.
Sure. Well, you know, what I really like about what you're saying is the fact that it's personal. Now, that seems so obvious, but, you know, your title, that the roller coaster of change, you know, we're all on the same roller coaster. We're all going to experience the same up and down, the same fear, the same excitement, but we're all going to process it differently because of our backgrounds and our experiences, maybe our physical makeup and other things. And it seems to me that's what's missing so often in corporate America, is they focus that, hey, you're all going to have the same change, so you should all be able to deal with it the same way. But, hey, we're all individuals. So
exactly.
Yeah, I want to come back and talk more about that. But first, okay, Let's take a break for a commercial, and then we'll be right back with you, Janine.
Terrific.
Do you want a free analysis of your inbound marketing? Do you want it in 30 seconds or less? Then check out Marketing Grader, the free marketing tool from HubSpot. It's simple. Just go to marketinggrader.com, enter the URL that you want to analyze, and Marketing Grader will instantly give you a detailed report grading your lead generation, mobile marketing, social media, competitive benchmarking, and more. It's simple, it's powerful, and it's free. MarketingGrader.com.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader. Tutor or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with Janine McDonald of J9 Leading Solutions, and we're talking about change management. And we just talked a little bit about how personal change really is and how people deal with it differently. So Janine, what is the solution here? I mean, why are they so resistant to change, and why do our efforts fail so often?
That's a very good question. I think because it's not recognized always that that the change is at the individual level, right? You know, if an organization is going to achieve change, they're only going to do that if the individuals change. And when you're talking about changing behavior, that's not an easy thing to do. And one of the things that I like to, you know, point out and try to help people understand is that if they can actually help people understand their own reactions to change and what it means to kind of go through and transition. I mean, change, there's an event, perhaps, but change really is a process, and there's this transition period of when people have to let the old way go. They're often kind of stuck in this neutral zone, you know, that they've got one foot on each side. They're trying to break their old habits, but they haven't quite gotten the new way of doing things. And it takes time to move into that and embrace and accept that change. And some of the reasons people, you know, change efforts fail because of, you know, there's a lack of vision that's not clear to the people. They don't have the buy-in from the employees that they need, and they resist. And if the employees resist and they don't adopt the change, often, you know, the initiatives will fail. And unfortunately, that is in a majority, like 70%, the research says 70% of the times these change initiatives don't succeed. And so I think at the very heart of it is helping to educate and train and coach the managers, because those are the people that the employees trust. And if the managers are equipped to lead the employees through the change at that level, at kind of the line level, then the efforts have much more likelihood of succeeding. You know, the ability to have the buy-in is there, the ability to have, you know, more direct communication is there. And, you know, there's a lot of time that's spent in planning a change management, a strategy around communication. There's a lot of time spent around training. Do we need to do training? But I think another component that is starting to, you know, catch on is really having a coaching component of a change management strategy, where both from an internal perspective, you know, folks are trained to really be these kind of coaches or change advocates or change champions, whatever you'd like to call them. But they're really, you know, they have more information. They have, you know, better visibility to, you know, what are the business reasons behind the change. And then they're, you know, placed with the folks that have the questions that need to be answered, and they're put out there to help with that communication on a more personal level. Because you can send, you know, and it's important to send written, you know, emails and newsletters around changes and those sorts of things. Those are always part of a communication strategy, you know, but what's really a differentiator is the more the conversations can happen at a personal level to help people understand what this change means to them personally, how, you know, if they are part of the change and part of the solution, how it will benefit not only them but the organization ultimately. Because at the end of the day, it is that what's in it for me kind of thing. Why should I bother? You know, I've seen different changes come and go, and it hasn't made it. You know, people have these stories that they tell, and so you really want to help them understand what it means to them personally.
And you know, and that's really the key, I think, and that's really what I want to ask you here is how you do that. Because I mean, we're dealing with in a corporation, we're dealing with a corporate policy or corporate activity that's going to cause the change. And yet you and I know that people only change if there is a benefit to them.
Right.
You know, something has got to be more pleasurable than the pain they're going to experience in going through the change. And
yeah, well, that's where, you know, it's very important to have visible and active, engaged, you know, leadership, sponsorship behind whatever change is happening. You know, people need to know that the leadership is behind it. But it's really kind of interpreting it in terms of, you know, the business reasons into what it means for them as individuals. And, you know, if people can't see the vision, if they don't understand where they're trying to get to, what is that future state, what does that look like, they have a hard time, you know, trying to do anything differently. And so you have to really go about also, you know, sharing these messages and this vision in multiple ways, using multiple mediums, because, you know, as adults, we, you know, digest and we learn information in a different way. And so someone might need to see it written out. Someone else might need to talk it through with somebody else. You know, it's that idea where you do have to somewhat customize the approach to how people are given the information about the change. And really, you know, I talk and work a lot around the area of employee engagement. And where I see a difference in change management initiatives being successful is to what extent have the employees been engaged early in the process, maybe even before the change is ultimately decided, right? You know, what are we looking at if we're looking to, you know, launch a new product, or if we're looking to launch a new service line? You know, are the employees, you know, engaged early on? The earlier, the better. And, you know, having them involved and having them feel like they have a voice is really helpful to ultimately when the changes start to be implemented, you know, you've got their support and the adoption can be quicker if it's just top,
you know,
down. Here's what's changing and here's what you have to do.
From a best practices point of view, can you give us any examples of specifically things that have been done that you thought really were very effective in engaging the employees or communicating the vision to the employees?
Sure. So a couple examples. One is with a Fortune 500 company I've currently been working with. So they really are going around about a transformation, an organizational transformation that, you know, really will be years in the making. They're already, you know, about a year and a half into this process. And they actually, you know, spent a good amount of time in that visioning stage of this process. And as part of that, though, they created actual kind of visual tools that could be shared with people, you know, and they would host kind of these town hall meetings or these, they call them the previews of, you know, here really, you know, when you talk, you can tell somebody about a vision, but when you show them, here is what it looks like with, you know, they had done a prototype up of what this new, you know, platform or this product would look like, and people could really see it and feel it, and they couldn't taste it, but, you know, they really engaged the senses around making it, you know, somewhat tactile, because there's a whole element of technology, and they were able to show and highlight that. And that was really early on, you know, they move from that stage to where they're, you know, having to actually plan and implement. And so some of the reality of that vision, right, shifts as you get into the real time. But it allowed people early on to understand, and especially people who weren't directly involved in the project, to kind of see, oh, this is what I keep hearing about. You know, it hasn't touched me quite yet, but now I know more about it. So it's really having a focus on that awareness piece early on, and that idea of being transparent. And you know, you really can't, in my opinion, this is, you know, overshare what you're doing, even if it's going to. And when what happened in this scenario too, things change as you move along, right? As the reality of research and compliance and legal things, you know, come into bay, what you actually are going to end up with what your blue sky thinking was, you know, there's often a variance there. But as long as people, they like kind of following along the journey, and these transformations really are a journey. And so it's important not to wait till the end, which is often the case, right, when you've kind of reached the destination. Oh, we're done. We're launching the product. We're launching the service line of business here. You know, it's much better practice to have people come with you along the journey, see that sometimes there are detours, see that sometimes there, you know, are actual roadblocks that have to be overcome. And then especially when, you know, in that case of a roadblock that often happens in a large, you know, transformational project, you know, how can they be part of the solution? If they have this awareness coming into it, you know, perhaps that's where you'll find the solution to that roadblock is from that employee base and not necessarily the project team that's been working on this, you know, so closely. You've got a little bit of an outside perspective. So that's one example. The other example I kind of mentioned is this idea of building a, you know, a group of change advocates or change champions or change agents that really are the representative of all the different groups, functions, departments in the organization, you know, and they are given information that, you know, in maybe a traditional situation, wouldn't be information that would be shared as early on with employee groups. And they are then, you know, serve as a critical point of contact for people and, you know, the larger organization to go to. So they're responsible on one hand to be the advocates, to be the cheerleaders, and sharing the message, a consistent message, hopefully. And then also, though, they're a way to have two-way communication. And that's a really a key success factor. Is communication is typically planned and talked about, but is it truly two-way? And so when you have these preview-type sessions where people can ask questions, and when you have change advocates that people can go to ask questions, and, you know, also, you know, another example is really surveying and asking people, what do you know about what it is we're trying to achieve here? What concerns you? What excites you? What questions do you have? When you engage them and make that communication two-way, that also enhances your success.
Well, you know, you've given us a lot of great information there. A couple of points I want to just go back, because I thought they were real gems. And one was the comment you made that the group that needs to actually really be involved in this change is many times the group that you don't feel is going to be affected by the change.
Right.
And I thought that was just genius. I mean, I have seen so many changes sabotaged, not in a negative sense, not in a deliberate sense, but in the sense of people not being supportive by groups that were ignored because it was assumed they would not be impacted by the change. And I think your comment that very group has to be included was
the activity or the exercise that we'll often go through in a process like this in terms of, you know, analyzing what are the organizational impacts, who's impacted in what way. You know, I always really push to ask to talk about every group in the organization, because the tendency is to go to the obvious ones that people, they know about, and okay, well, those are the obvious ones, but everybody is impacted in some way. So let's talk about these other, you know, groups that are less obvious, and maybe the impact is less high impact, but it is an impact nonetheless. And so, I do find folks in those areas that really truly can support and advocate the overall program. And to your point, it's kind of like the opposite of, often in those groups, you find that the folks that are, you know, undermining and, you know, saying things like, oh, that'll never work, or we've tried that before, or, you know, I wish somebody would ask me. I know how we could have done this better. You know, you get all that kind of stuff. And as opposed to if you bring everybody in, you have a more positive experience, I think, overall. And to my earlier comment about, so no matter what, things like, now I can't get the table I like to eat lunch at, or there's more people in the cafeteria, or somebody's got my parking place. That's across the board. Those are kind of human needs kind of issues for people. And whether my department has a new process or not, you know, the fact that, you know, more people are going to be working in our same office building than we had last week, well, that's an impact to me.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that I thought was really wonderful there was the idea that not just that you have advocates for the change, but the emphasis on two-way communication. You know, when people feel they're being heard, it changes the whole environment. It changes the whole culture of the company.
Right, and you know what's important about that, too, is it's okay. People are okay if what they have to say is different from the decision that is made. They just want to have it kind of, you know, it's for the record kind of thing. This is what I think or what I would have liked to have seen. It's not to say that they won't, you know, join and adopt and come along and maybe even later have their mind changed, but giving them that opportunity to express that so they don't just hold that in is key. It's really critical. And you know, allowing the two-way communication to happen is important. And often it's still very, in many situations, it's still very top-down. And, you know, messages are delivered, and there's not an opportunity to get the feedback, you know, that I think employees would like to give and you know, engage and participate. That's an important question if you're in the situation as an organizational leader, you know, asking how are we engaging employees and soliciting their participation, and you know, and then building, you know, the strategies and the ideas from there. Some of which we've been talking about. And you know, and back to the leadership challenge for the managers, you know, at the executive level, really asking, you know, are our managers, our leaders prepared to handle the challenges of leading change? And I think companies have a lot of opportunity there where, and I think that's where even having, you know, managers coached around leading change is a really great thing that can be done to help with the change initiative.
Okay, so that's perfect. I was just going to ask you about the role of coaching, which you've mentioned in this, and one is for the managers to be coached in how to lead the change. What other are the coaching roles or involvements that you see in this change management process?
Well, you know, I also, and I'm starting to see this more, where it's it can be a combination of both internal, you know, business leaders that are serving as coaches, and also external coaches being brought in, you know, depending on, you know, the audiences and what you're trying to achieve with the coaching around change. So, you know, I think that's something that I'm seeing around this. And I think coaching at the employee level, if you're looking at change where people's roles and their jobs are changing, and perhaps, you know, maybe the job that they're in now, perhaps it's going to be outsourced. What does that mean to them, right? So there's coaching kind of around a career management or career transition or career development that I think is very helpful, that if it's provided, it really can help retain employees. It can help employees that, you know, maybe the impact is they need to look at, you know, a different job in the organization or doing something differently. If there's, you know, some coaching around what does that look like, what does that future look like, I think that's another important role that a coach can play in a change situation.
Okay. We're going to take a short word or hear a short word from our producer, and then we'll be right back with Janine. Thank you.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
This is the sound of a flat-screen television hurled off a building. Now the new bike your kid wants. These are the things you could have, all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Use Energy Star light bulbs and appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Okay, and we're back with Janine McDonald of J9 Leading Solutions, and we're talking about change management. Why does it fail so often, and what can companies do to improve the effectiveness of their change efforts? Anything beyond what we've been talking about that you can share with us, Janine?
I think we've really, you know, covered the highlights, which are around, you know, engaging people early in the process, helping them understand, you know, that change is a personal experience, and so how do they view change? You know, what has been their past experience? What might cause them to feel the reaction that they're feeling when they hear about a change that's kind of forthcoming? You know, we talked a lot about communication and the importance of it being two-way, and really equipping the leaders in the organization to lead the change that their people, their employees are experiencing. And so giving them the coaching, the training, and the tools really to do that effectively. It's a competency that I think a lot of leaders need to develop, and it ought to be an initial question a organization asks is, are our people ready to lead this change we're thinking about proposing? And, you know, and I did want to make a comment too, where it kind of talked in a singular way about change, but, you know, with the environment that we're in now, the business environment, I mean, a lot of change is externally driven, right? Because the world around us is changing, and companies either have to change or they will fail. And in some cases, that creates, I mean, change is often, you know, spurred by that kind of, there's something, a sense of urgency that has to either be created. But in this economy, and what I've seen recently is the urgency is often brought on by an external threat that people have to now adapt to or react to. And, you know, hopefully you can be ahead of that and being, you know, looking future forward, but things are happening so quickly that, you know, if you're in a nonprofit, you know, working in health and human services, well, everything coming out right now about decisions around Medi-Cal and Medicaid and what's happening at the state level and the federal level, all those things could be disruptive to your business model and really cause significant changes in your organization, some of which no one would choose or plan, but they're just a reality of the world around that has to be dealt with, and in some cases has to be dealt with quickly. So that makes it hard, too, when sometimes change is forced upon an organization. And, again, if you go back to the fact that the change can't really be truly achieved unless individual change is achieved and their behaviors changed, in either case you have to tackle it and you have to know how to be able to lead it and support it and hopefully mitigate the risk, mitigate the fear, and help people move along that kind of that spectrum of acceptance towards, I'm letting something go, it's changing, okay, I'm getting my footing, I think I kind of know where I'm at, to coming out this other side and really living and working and doing things in a new way.
And you know, Janine, you mentioned, you know, behavior. We're trying to change behavior. Behavior has changed in so many different ways, and we put so many different titles, labels on how we change or work with changing behavior. We talk about coaching, we talk about consulting, we talk about training, we talk about mentoring. You do all of those things. Talk to us about the importance of the distinction between them, or is there a distinction? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, it's funny because I'll get calls around, oh, I would like you to provide coaching. And when I get in there, I think, oh, this is really more consulting. Or someone will call me, can you provide training for our organization? And I'll think, oh, they really need some coaching and not training in the traditional standpoint of a class or something like that. So there is a lot of confusion, you know, I think amongst people around what that distinction is. But I do think it's they're complementary services, which is why I don't, you know, necessarily I'm, you know, say I'm one and not the other. But you know, one of the things I do like to talk about in terms of business consultants and business coaches, they're really agents of change, right? And how they go about that, you know, helping to achieve that change at an individual, group, or company level, you know, that's really kind of the inherent relationship and the approach and the tactics are a little different. So for me, you know, when I look at something as being more of a true engagement, you know, the focus is on the individual within the context of the organization in which they're working. You know, the goal is behavioral change, you know, and it could be professional, but there's a significant personal, you know, piece of it as well, personal development. And the foundation is, you know, for dialogue, is for around inquiry, for self-awareness, and action and accountability. And those are all the things that when I was working with a coach to, you know, kind of open, you know, write the next chapter of my professional and personal life, you know, that was really the relationship that we have. When I do, you know, when I do business consulting, the focus is more on the organization. But certainly, we have to take the individuals within the organization into account. You know, you can't do it in isolation, or at least I recommend not doing that. The goal, you know, really is organizational change and development, and the foundation for the dialogue there is for them to leverage, you know, the expertise of myself and my colleagues to help give advice, recommendations, best practices. So those to me are some of the distinctions that I kind of see between, you know, business consulting and business coaching.
You know, I love the way you put it. What I heard back was that when we take the labels of consulting, coaching, or training, or mentoring, mm-hmm. they sort of describe the process, but mm-hmm. all of the processes are geared to one thing, changing behavior.
That's right. Yep.
And what a wonderful way to look at that, not as competitive functions, but as part of tools that are available to us to affect a change in behavior, which is what the client's always looking for.
Yes, exactly. You know, and then really complementary. And often in an engagement, I am doing all of those things. You know, we're consulting, we're part of the strategy is training that's needed, part of it's, you know, providing some coaching. And so it really is a complementary kind of suite of services that can be offered to a client.
Well, look, as we wrap up here, Janine, is there anything that I interrupted you on, you didn't get a chance to talk about, anything you want to kind of wrap us up with to share with our audience?
Well, I thought it would be fun if I asked you a question because I don't think we talked about this. If you have any guesses for the J9 in my business name, what the 9 might be significant for?
No, I don't. In fact,
okay,
I was
well,
wondering
it was
what it was.
So it's a trick question because my name is spelled J-A-N-I-N-E, so that's the J9. But my model for the services that we provide and kind of the leadership framework that I coach and teach and speak around, there's a 9-step process or 9, you know, areas of focus for the business, which is around, you know, how do you build leaders, you know, how do you help with the visioning, the focus on the culture of an organization, how do you share and collaborate, how do you execute and do the work, how do you engage people, how do you develop them, how do you build the team, and ultimately how do you achieve results. So we've got kind of 9 areas that we try to help our clients focus on, so that's also significant for the 9. So
and,
I thought that might be a fun way to...
And you have a wonderful website that takes those 9 areas and explains them in much more detail.
Yes.
And really, our audience should go to your website. Why don't you tell them what that is right now so that they can get all that information?
Terrific. Yes. So our website is J and then the number 9, leadingsolutions.com. We also have a blog there and a Twitter feed. You can find me on Twitter at J9MC. And you can also sign up for our email and, you know, really appreciate having a dialogue and communication with folks that are following me, you know, whether it's on Twitter or LinkedIn. And I do a little bit of Facebook. You can find me there, but that's more to post pictures of the grandson for the grandparents kind of place. So you can certainly friend me, but I do post my blog there, but I don't do a lot of business activity there on Facebook. That's more for the family. But, you know, really appreciate the opportunity today to talk with you, Doug. And maybe one thing I did, you asked me a little bit. I am really proud, and it was very part of my personal mission and purpose in building my business, is I do a significant amount of work in Orange County with our nonprofits here and helping them to build their capacity to serve, you know, their clients, which are often the neediest in our community. And so I do that work through 1OC, which I also wanted to try to take the opportunity to direct folks to, because if they're looking for ways to volunteer in the community, 1OC can provide them opportunities for volunteerism, and that's just another place where I do consulting for those folks and coaching, you know, for nonprofits, because they actually make up a significant portion of our business revenue here in Orange County, and it might surprise people just how many. We have over 3,000 nonprofits, and the jobs that they provide, it's one in every seven or so jobs, and the revenue that they bring into our county is really significant. So also really trying to help them, you know, effectively run their organizations so they can serve more people that need their services and then have an overall greater impact in our community is something I wanted to just kind of maybe close with, because it's very important to, you know, it's near and dear to my heart, and it's a very important part of the work that I do.
Well, Janine, your heart is in your work, and it shows. And thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. And welcome to the Coaching Perspective business community. And we appreciate you, again, taking the time. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You as well. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, we've been listening to Janine McDonald of J9 Leading Solutions and talking about change management. Great dialogue. If you've tuned in late, go to our website. We will have the podcast posted up the beginning of next week, and you can catch the whole podcast and listen to it at your leisure. Be sure to tune in next week, Thursday, 4 o'clock, for another great show. You know, we have been coaching executives and business owners for 18 years here in Orange County, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. Our goal, our function, is helping to create more effective teams. That's our primary focus. And we work with both existing and new management teams and project teams. So if you have a need for that, we'd love to talk to you and love to be able to help you. With that, thank you very much for joining us today. I hope that we have provided you information that you can use to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.